but it was by luck alone, not skill. I would die of shock if you managed to do anything useful again for a long time.
This is the Marcus that Tobias knows. The one who knows right where to hit to cause the most damage. My body shudders with anger. Tobias is right about you, I say. You're nothing but an arrogant, lying piece of garbage.
He said that, did he?
Marcus raises his eyebrows. No, I say. He doesn't mention you enough to say something like that. I figured it out all on my own. I clench my teeth. You're almost nothing to him, you know. And as time goes on, you become less and less. Marcus doesn't answer me. He turns back to the water purifier. I stand for a moment in my triumph, the sound of rushing water combining with the heartbeat in my ears. Then I leave the building. And it isn't until I'm halfway across the field that I realize I didn't win. Marcus did. Whatever the truth is, I'll have to get it from somewhere else, because I won't be asking him again. That night I dream that I am in a field, and I encounter a flock of crows clustered on the ground. When I swat a few of them away, I realize that they are perched on top of a man, pecking at his clothes, which are abnegation gray. Without warning, they take flight, and I realize that the man is Will. Then I wake up. I turn my face into the pillow and release. Instead of his name, a sob that throws my body against the mattress. I feel the monster of grief again, writhing in the empty space where my heart and stomach used to be. I gasp, pressing both palms to my chest. Now the monstrous thing has its claws around my throat, squeezing my airway. I twist and put my head between my knees, breathing until the strangled feeling leaves me. Even though the air is warm, I shiver. I get out of bed and creep down the hallway toward Tobias's room. My bare legs almost glow in the dark. His door creaks when I pull it open, loud enough to wake him. He stares at me for a second.
Come here,
he says, sluggish from sleep. He shifts back on the bed to leave space for me. I should have thought this through. I sleep in a long t-shirt one of the Amity lent me. It comes down just past my butt, and I didn't think to put on a pair of shorts before I came here. Tobias's eyes skim my bare legs, making my face warm. I lie down facing him.
Bad dream?
He says. I nod.
What happened?
I shake my head. I can't tell him that I'm having nightmares about Will, or would have to explain why. What would he think of me if he knew what I had done? How would he look at me? He keeps his hand on my cheek, moving his thumb over my cheekbone idly.
We're all right, you know, he says. You and me, okay?
My chest aches, and I nod.
Nothing else is all right.
His whisper tickles my cheek.
But we are.
Tobias, I say. But whatever I was about to say gets lost in my head, and I press my mouth to his, because I know that kissing him will distract me from everything. He kisses me back. His hand starts on my cheek, and then brushes over my side, fitting to the bend in my waist, curving over my hip, sliding to my bare leg, making me shiver. I press closer to him and wrap my leg around him. My head buzzes with nervousness, but the rest of me seems to know exactly what it's doing, because it all pulses to the same rhythm. All wants the same thing. To escape itself and become a part of him instead. His mouth moves against mine, and his hand slips under the hem of the t-shirt, and I don't stop him, though I know I should. Instead, a faint sigh escapes me, and heat rushes into my cheeks, embarrassment. Either he didn't hear me, or he didn't care, because he presses his palm to my lower back, presses me closer. His fingers move slowly up my back, tracing my spine. My shirt creeps up my body, and I don't pull it down, even when I feel cool air on my stomach. He kisses my neck, and I grab his shoulder to steady myself, gathering his shirt into my fist.
His hand reaches the top of my back and curls around my neck. My shirt is twisted around his arm, and our kisses become desperate. I know my hands are shaking from all the nervous energy inside me, so I tighten my grip on his shoulder so he won't notice. Then his fingers brush the bandage on my shoulder, and a dart of pain goes through me. It didn't hurt much, but it brings me back to reality. I can't be with him in that way if one of the reasons for wanting it is to distract myself from grief. I lean back and carefully pull the hem of my shirt down so it covers me again. For a second, we just lie there, our heavy breaths mixing. I don't mean to cry. Now is not a good time to cry. No. It has to stop. But I can't get the tears out of my eyes, no matter how many times I blink. Sorry, I say. He says almost sternly, "Don't apologize." He brushes the tears from my cheeks. I know that I'm bird-like, made narrow and small as if for taking flight, built straight-waisted and fragile. But when he touches me like he can't bear to take his hand away, I don't wish I was any different. I don't mean to be such a mess, I say, my voice cracking. I just feel so. I shake my head. It's wrong, he says. It doesn't matter if your parents are in a better place. They aren't here with you, and that's wrong, Triss. It shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have happened to you. And anyone who tells you it's okay is a liar. A sob racks my body again, and he wraps his arms around me so tightly I find it difficult to breathe, but it doesn't matter. My dignified weeping gives way to full-on ugliness. My mouth open and my face contorted, and sounds like a dying animal coming from my throat. If this continues, I will break apart. And maybe that would be better. Maybe it would be better to shatter and bear nothing. He doesn't speak for a long time, until I am quiet again. Sleep, he says. I'll fight the bad dreams off if they come to get you. With what? My bare hands, obviously. I wrap my arm around his waist and take a deep breath of his shoulder. He smells like sweat and fresh air and mint, from the salve he sometimes uses to relax his sore muscles. He smells safe, too, like sunlit walks in the orchard and silent breakfasts in the dining hall. And in the moments before I drift off to sleep, I almost forget about our war-torn city and all the conflict that will come to find us soon, if we don't find it first. In the moments before I drift off to sleep, I hear him whisper, "I love you, Triss." And maybe I would say it back, but I am too far gone. Chapter 6. That morning I wake up to the buzz of an electric razor. Tobias stands in front of the mirror, his head tilted so he can see the corner of his jaw. I hug my knees covered by the sheet and watch him. "Good morning," he says. "How did you sleep?" "Okay." I get up, and as he tilts his head back to address his chin with the razor, I wrap my arms around him, pressing my forehead to his back where the Dauntless tattoo peeks out from beneath his shirt. He sets the razor down and folds his hands over mine. Neither of us breaks the silence. I listen to him breathe, and he strokes my fingers idly, the task at hand forgotten. "I should go get ready," I say after a while. I am reluctant to leave, but I am supposed to work in the laundry rooms, and I don't want the Amity to say I'm not fulfilling my part of the deal they offered us. "I'll get you something to wear," he says. I walk barefoot down the hallway a few minutes later, wearing the t-shirt I slept in and a pair of shorts Tobias borrowed from the Amity. When I get back to my bedroom, Peter is standing next to my bed. Instinct makes me straighten up and search the room for a blunt object. "Get out," I say as steadily as I can, but it's hard to keep my voice from shaking. I can't help but remember the look in his eyes as he held me over the chasm by my throat or slammed me against the wall in the Dauntless compound. He turns to look at me. Lately, when he looks at me, it's without his usual malice. Instead, he just seems exhausted, his posture slouched, his wounded arm in a sling. But I am not fooled. "What are you doing in my room?" He walks closer to me.
What are you doing stalking Marcus? I saw you after breakfast yesterday. I match his stare with my own. That's none of your business. Get out. I'm here because I don't know why you get to keep track of that hard drive, he says. It's not like you're particularly stable these days. I'm unstable? I laugh. I find that a little funny coming from you. Peter pinches his lips together and says nothing. I narrow my eyes. Why are you so interested in the hard drive anyway? I'm not stupid, he says. I know it contains more than the simulation data. No, you aren't stupid, are you? I say. You think if you deliver it to the erudite, they'll forgive your indiscretion and let you back in their good graces. I don't want to be back in their good graces, he says, stepping forward again. If I had, I wouldn't have helped you in the Dauntless compound. I jab his sternum with my index finger, digging in my fingernail. You helped me because you didn't want me to shoot you again. I may not be an abnegation-loving faction traitor. He seizes my finger. But no one gets to control me, especially not the erudite. I yank my hand back, twisting so that he won't be able to hold on. My hands are sweaty. I don't expect you to understand. I wipe my hands on the hem of my shirt as I inch toward the dresser. I'm sure if it had been candor and not abnegation that got attacked, you would have just let your family get shot between the eyes without protest. But I'm not like that. Careful what you say about my family, stiff. He moves with me toward the dresser, but I carefully shift so that I stand between him and the drawers. I'm not going to reveal the hard drive's location by getting it out while he's in here, but I don't want to leave the path to it clear either. His eyes shift to the dresser behind me, to the left side, where the hard drive is hidden. I frown at him, then notice something I didn't before. A rectangular bulge in one of his pockets. Give it to me, I say. Now. No. Give it to me, or so help me, I will kill you in your sleep. He smirks. If only you could see how ridiculous you look when you threaten people. Like a little girl telling me she's going to strangle me with her jump rope. I start toward him, and he shifts back into the hallway. Don't call me little girl. I'll call you whatever I want. I jerk into action, aiming my left fist where I know it will hurt the worst, at the bullet wound in his arm. He dodges the punch, but instead of trying again, I seize his arm as hard as I can and wrench it to the side. Peter screams at the top of his lungs, and while he's distracted by the pain, I kick him hard in the knee, and he falls to the ground. People rush into the hallway, wearing gray and black and yellow and red. Peter surges toward me in a half-crouch and punches me in the stomach. I hunch over, but the pain doesn't stop me. I let out something between a groan and a scream and launch myself at him, my left elbow pulled back near my mouth so that I can slam it into his face. One of the Amity grabs me by the arms and half lifts, half pulls me away from Peter. The wound in my shoulder throbs, but I hardly feel it through the pulse of adrenaline. I strain toward him and try to ignore the stunned faces of the Amity and the abnegation and Tobias around me, and the woman kneels next to Peter, whispering words in a soothing tone of voice. I try to ignore his groans of pain and the guilt stabbing at my stomach. I hate him. I don't care. I hate him. Triss, calm down, Tobias says. He has the hard drive, I yell. He stole it from me. He has it. Tobias walks over to Peter, ignoring the woman crouched beside him, and presses his foot into Peter's ribcage to keep him in place. He then reaches into Peter's pocket and takes out the hard drive. Tobias says to him, very quietly, we won't be in a safe house forever. And this wasn't very smart of you. Then he turns toward me and adds, not very smart of you either. Do you want us to get kicked out? I scowl. The Amity man with his hand on my arm starts to pull me down the hallway. I try to wrench my body out of his grasp. What do you think you're doing? Let go of me! You violated the terms of our peace agreement, he says gently. We must follow protocol. Just go, says Tobias. You need to cool down. I search the faces of the crowd that has gathered. No one argues with Tobias. Their eyes skirt mine. So I allow two Amity men to escort me down the hallway.
Watch your step, one of them says. The floorboards are uneven here. My head pounds, a sign that I am calming down. The graying Amity man opens a door on the left. A label on the door says conflict room. Are you putting me in a timeout or something? I scowl. That is something the Amity would do. Put me in timeout and then teach me to do cleansing breaths and think positive thoughts. The room is so bright I have to squint to see. The opposite wall has large windows that look out over the orchard. Despite this, the room feels small, probably because the ceiling, like the walls and floor, is also covered with wooden boards. Please sit, the older man says, gesturing toward the stool in the middle of the room. It, like all other furniture in the Amity compound, is made of unpolished wood, and looks sturdy, like it is still attached to the earth. I do not sit. The fight is over, I say. I won't do it again, not here. We have to follow protocol, the younger man says. Please sit, and we'll discuss what happened, and then we'll let you go. All their voices are so soft. Not hushed, like the abnegation speak, always treading holy ground and trying not to disturb. Soft. Soothing. Low. I wonder, then, if that is something they teach their initiates here. How best to speak, move, smile, to encourage peace. I don't want to sit down, but I do, perched on the edge of the chair so I can get up fast if necessary. The younger man stands in front of me. Hinges creak behind me. I look over my shoulder. The older man is fumbling with something on a counter behind me. What are you doing? I am making tea, he says. I don't think tea is really the solution to this. Then tell us, the younger man says, drawing my attention back to the windows. He smiles at me. What do you believe is the solution?
Throwing Peter out of this compound.
It seems to me, the man says gently, that you are the one who attacked him. Indeed, that you are the one who shot him in the arm. You have no idea what he did to deserve those things. My cheeks get hot again and mimic my heartbeat. He tried to kill me. And someone else. He stabbed someone else in the eye. With a butter knife. He is evil. I had every right to... I feel a sharp pain in my neck. Dark spots cover the man in front of me, obscuring my view of his face. I'm sorry, dear, he says. We are just following protocol. The older man is holding a syringe. A few drops of whatever he injected me with are still in it. They are bright green, the color of grass. I blink rapidly, and the dark spots disappear. But the world still swims before me, like I am tilting forward and back in a rocking chair. How do you feel? The younger man says. I feel angry. I was about to say. Angry with Peter. Angry with the Amity. But that's not true, is it? I smile. I feel good. I feel a little like I'm floating or swaying. How do you feel? Dizziness is a side effect of the serum. You may want to rest this afternoon. And I'm feeling well, thank you for asking, he says. You may leave now if you would like. Can you tell me where to find Tobias? I say. When I imagine his face, affection for him bubbles up inside me, and all I want to do is kiss him. For, I mean. He's so handsome, isn't he? I don't really know why he likes me so much. I'm not very nice, am I?
Not most of the time, no, the man says. But I think you could be, if you tried.
Thank you, I say. That's nice of you to say.
I think you'll find him in the orchard, he says. I saw him go outside after the fight. I laugh a little.
The fight. What a silly thing. And it does seem like a silly thing. Slamming your fist into someone else's body. Like a caress, but too hard. A caress is much nicer. Maybe I should have run my hand along Peter's arm instead.
That would have felt better for both of us. My knuckles wouldn't ache right now. I get up and steer myself toward the door. I have to lean against the wall for balance, but it's sturdy, so I don't mind. I stumble down the hallway, giggling at my inability to balance. I'm clumsy again, just like I was when I was younger. My mother used to smile at me and say, "Be careful where you put your feet, Beatrice. I don't want you to hurt yourself." I walk outside and the green on the trees seems greener. So potent I can almost taste it. Maybe I can taste it. And it is like the grass I decided to chew when I was a child just to see what it was like. I almost fall down the stairs because of the swaying and burst into laughter when the grass tickles my bare feet. I wander toward the orchard. "Four!" I call out. Why am I calling out a number? Oh, yes. Because that's his name. I call out again. "Four! Where are you?"
"Triss," says a voice from the trees on my right. It almost sounds like the tree is talking to me.
I giggle. But of course it's just Tobias, ducking under a branch. I run toward him, and the ground lurches to the side, so I almost fall. His hand touches my waist, steadies me. The touch sends a shock through my body, and all my insides burn like his fingers ignited them. I pull closer to him, pressing my body against his, and lift my head to kiss him.
"What did they?"
He starts, but I stop him with my lips. He kisses me back, but too quickly. So I sigh heavily.
"That was lame," I say.
"Okay, no it wasn't, but..." I stand on my tiptoes to kiss him again, and he presses his finger to my lips to stop me.
"Triss," he says, "what did they do to you? You're acting like a lunatic."
"That's not very nice of you to say," I say. "They put me in a good mood, that's all."
"And now I really want to kiss you, so if you could just relax." "I'm not going to kiss you. I'm going to figure out what's going on," he says.
I pout my lower lip for a second, but then I grin as the pieces come together in my mind.
"That's why you like me," I exclaim.
"Because you're not very nice either.
It makes so much more sense now."
"Come on," he says. "We're going to see Johanna."
"I like you too."
"That's encouraging," he replies flatly.
"Come on." "Oh, for God's sake, I'll just carry you."
He swings me into his arms, one arm under my knees and the other around my back. I wrap my arms around his neck and plant a kiss on his cheek. Then I discover that the air feels nice on my feet when I kick them. So I move my feet up and down as he walks us toward the building where Johanna works. When we reach her office, she is sitting behind a desk with a stack of paper in front of her, chewing on a pencil eraser. She looks up at us, and her mouth drifts open slightly. A hunk of dark hair covers the left side of her face.
"You really shouldn't cover up your scar," I say. "You look prettier with your hair out of your face."
Tobias sets me down too heavily. The impact is jarring and hurts my shoulder a little. But I like the sound my feet made when they hit the floor. I laugh, but neither Johanna nor Tobias laughs with me.
"Strange. What did you do to her?" Tobias says, terse. "What in God's name did you do?"
"I..." Johanna frowns at me. "They must have given her too much. She's very small. They probably didn't take her height and weight into account."
"They must have given her too much of what?" he says.
"You have a nice voice," I say.
"Triss," he says, "please be quiet."
"The peace serum," Johanna says. "In small doses it has a mild, calming effect and improves the mood. The only side effect is some slight dizziness. We administer it to members of our community who have trouble keeping the peace." Tobias snorts.
"I'm not an idiot. Every member of your community has trouble keeping the peace.
because they're all human. You probably dump it into the water supply.
Johanna does not respond for a few seconds. She folds her hands in front of her.
Clearly, you know that is not the case, or this conflict would have not occurred, she says. But whatever we agree to do here, we do together, as a faction.
If I could give the serum to everyone in this city, I would. You would certainly not be in the situation you are in now if I had. Oh, definitely, he says. Drugging the entire population is the best solution to our problem.
Great plan. Sarcasm is not kind for, she says gently. Now, I'm sorry about the mistake in giving too much to Triss. I really am. But she violated the terms of our agreement, and I'm afraid that you might not be able to stay here much longer as a result. The conflict between her and the boy, Peter, is not something we can forget.
Don't worry, says Tobias. We intend to leave as soon as humanly possible.
Good, she says with a small smile. Peace between Amity and Dauntless can only happen when we maintain our distance from each other.
That explains a lot.
Excuse me? She says. What are you insinuating?
It explains, he says, gritting his teeth, why under a pretense of neutrality, as if such thing is possible, you have left us to die at the hands of the erudite.
Johanna sighs quietly and looks out the window. Beyond it is a small courtyard with vines growing in it. The vines creep onto the window's corners, like they are trying to come in and join the conversation.
The Amity wouldn't do something like that, I say. That's mean.
It is for the sake of peace that we remain uninvolved, Johanna begins.
Peace. Tobias almost spits the word. Yes, I'm sure it will be very peaceful when we are all either dead or cowering in submission under the threat of mind control or stuck in an endless simulation.
Johanna's face contorts, and I mimic her, to see what it feels like to have my face that way. It doesn't feel very good. I'm not sure why she did it to begin with. She says slowly, "The decision was not mine to make. If it was, perhaps we would be having a different conversation right now."
Are you saying you disagree with them?
I'm saying, she says, that it isn't my place to disagree with my faction publicly, but I might, in the privacy of my own heart.
Triss and I will be gone in 2 days, says Tobias. I hope your faction doesn't change their decision to make this compound a safe house.
Our decisions are not easily unmade.
What about Peter? You'll have to deal with him separately, he says, because he won't be coming with us.
Tobias takes my hand, and his skin feels nice against mine, though it's not smooth or soft.
I smile apologetically at Johanna, and her expression remains unchanged.
Four, she says. If you and your friends would like to remain untouched by our serum, you may want to avoid the bread.
Tobias says thank you over his shoulder as we make our way down the hall together, me skipping every other step.
Chapter 7. The serum wears off 5 hours later, when the sun is just beginning to set. Tobias shut me in my room for the rest of the day, checking on me every hour. This time when he comes in, I am sitting on the bed glaring at the wall.
Thank God, he says, pressing his forehead to the door. I was beginning to think it would never wear off, and I would have to leave you here to smell flowers or whatever you wanted to do while you were on that stuff.
I'll kill them, I say. I will kill them.
Don't bother. We're leaving soon anyway, he says, closing the door behind him. He takes the hard drive from his back pocket. I thought we could hide this behind your dresser.
That's where it was before.
Yeah, and that's why Peter won't look for it here again.
Tobias pulls the dresser away from the wall with one hand and wedges the hard drive behind it with the other.
Why couldn't I fight the peace serum? I say. If my brain is weird enough to resist the simulation serum, why not this one?
I don't know, really, he says. He drops down next to me on the bed, jostling the mattress, Maybe in order to fight off a serum, you have to want to.
Well, obviously I wanted to, I say frustrated, but without conviction.
Did I want to? Or was it nice to forget about anger, forget about pain, forget about everything for a few hours?
Sometimes, he says, sliding his arm across my shoulders, people just want to be happy, even if it's not real.
He's right. Even now, this peace between us comes from not talking about things, about Will or my parents, or me almost shooting him in the head, or Marcus. But I do not dare to disturb it with the truth, because I am too busy clinging to it for support.
You might be right, I say quietly.
Are you conceding? He says, his mouth falling open with mock surprise. Seems like that serum did you some good after all.
I shove him as hard as I can.
Take that back! Take it back now!
Okay, okay! He puts up his hands.
It's just... I'm not very nice either, you know. That's why I like you so out! I shout, pointing at the door.
Laughing to himself, Tobias kisses my cheek and leaves the room. That evening, I am too embarrassed by what happened to go to dinner, so I spend the time in the branches of an apple tree at the far end of the orchard, picking ripe apples. I climb as high as I dare to get them, muscles burning. I have discovered that sitting still leaves little spaces for the grief to get in, so I stay busy. I am wiping my forehead with the hem of my shirt, standing on a branch, when I hear the sound. It is faint at first, joining the buzz of cicadas. I stand still to listen, and after a moment, I realize what it is. Cars. The Amity own about a dozen trucks that they use for transporting goods, but they only do that on weekends. The back of my neck tingles. If it isn't the Amity, it's probably the Erudite, but I have to be sure. I grab the branch above me with both hands, but pull myself up with only my left arm. I'm surprised I'm still able to do that. I stand hunched, twigs and leaves tangled in my hair. A few apples fall to the ground when I shift my weight. Apple trees aren't very tall. I may not be able to see far enough. I use the nearby branches as steps, with my hands to steady me, twisting and leaning around the tree's maze. I remember climbing the Ferris wheel on the pier, my muscles shaking, my hands throbbing. I am wounded now, but stronger, and the climbing feels easier. The branches get thinner, weaker. I lick my lips and look at the next one. I need to climb as high as possible, but the branch I'm aiming for is short and looks pliable. I put my foot on it, testing its strength. It bends but holds. I start to lift myself up, to put the other foot down, and the branch snaps. I gasp as I fall back, seizing the tree trunk at the last second. This will have to be high enough. I stand on my tiptoes and squint in the direction of the sound. At first I see nothing but a stretch of farmland, a strip of empty ground, the fence and the fields and beginnings of buildings that lie beyond it. But approaching the gate are a few moving specks, silver, when the light catches them. Cars with black roofs, solar panels, which means only one thing. Erudite. A breath hisses between my teeth. I don't allow myself to think. I just put one foot down, then the other. So fast that bark peels off the branches and drifts towards the ground. As soon as my feet touch the earth, I run. I count the rows of trees as I pass them. 7, 8. The branches dip low, and I pass just beneath them. 9, 10. I hold my right arm against my chest as I sprint faster, the bullet wound in my shoulder throbbing with each footstep. 11, 12. When I reach the 13th row, I throw my body to the right, down one of the aisles. The trees are close together in the 13th row. Their branches grow into one another, creating a maze of leaves and twigs and apples. My lungs sting from a lack of oxygen, but I am not far from the end of the orchard. Sweat runs into my eyebrows. I reach the dining hall and throw open the door,
shoving my way through a group of Amity men, and he is there. Tobias sits at one end of the cafeteria with Peter and Caleb and Susan. I can barely see them between the spots on my vision, but Tobias touches my shoulder.
Erudite,
is all I manage to say.
Coming here?
He says.
I nod.
Do we have time to run?
I'm not sure about that.
By now the abnegation at the other end of the table are paying attention. They gather around us.
Why do we need to run?
Says Susan.
The Amity established this place as a safe house. No conflict allowed.
The Amity will have trouble enforcing that policy, says Marcus. How do you stop conflict without conflict?
Susan nods.
But we can't leave, Peter says. We don't have time. They'll see us.
Triss has a gun,
Tobias says. We can try to fight our way out.
He starts toward the dormitory.
Wait, I say. I have an idea.
I scan the crowd of abnegation.
Disguises. The erudite don't know for sure that we're still here. We can pretend to be Amity.
Those of us who aren't dressed like the Amity should go to the dormitories then, Marcus says. The rest of you, put your hair down, try to mimic their behavior.
The abnegation who are dressed in gray leave the dining hall in a pack and cross the courtyard to the guests' dormitory. Once inside, I turn to my bedroom, get on my hands and knees, and reach under the mattress for the gun. I feel around for a few seconds before I find it, and when I do, my throat pinches, and I can't swallow. I don't want to touch the gun. I don't want to touch it again.
Come on, Triss.
I shove the gun under the waistband of my red pants. It is lucky they are so baggy. I notice the vials of healing salve and pain medicine on the bedside table and shove them in my pocket, just in case we do manage to escape. Then I reach behind the dresser for the hard drive. If the erudite catch us, which is likely, they will search us. And I don't want to just hand over the attack simulation again. But this hard drive also contains the surveillance footage from the attack. The record of our losses, of my parents' deaths. The only piece of them I have left. And because the abnegation don't take photographs, the only documentation I have of how they looked. Years from now, when my memories begin to fade, what will I have to remind me of what they looked like? Their faces will change in my mind. I will never see them again.
Don't be stupid. It's not important. I squeeze the hard drive so tightly it hurts.
Then why does it feel so important?
Don't be stupid, I say aloud. I grip my teeth and grab the lamp from my bedside table. I yank the plug from the socket, throw the lampshade onto the bed, and crouch over the hard drive. Blinking tears from my eyes, I slam the base of the lamp into it, creating a dent. I bring the lamp down again and again and again, until the hard drive cracks and pieces of it spread across the floor. Then I kick the shards under the dresser, put the lamp back, and walk into the hallway, wiping my eyes with the back of my hand. A few minutes later, a small crowd of gray-clad men and women, and Peter, stand in the hallway, sorting through stacks of clothes.
Triss, says Caleb, you're still wearing gray.
I pinch my father's shirt and hesitate.
It's Dad's, I say. If I change out of it, I will have to leave it behind.
I bite my lip so that the pain will steady me. I have to get rid of it. It's just a shirt. That's all it is.
I'll put it under mine, Caleb says. They'll never see it.
I nod and grab a red shirt from the dwindling pile of clothes. It is large enough to conceal the bulge of the gun. I duck into a nearby room to change, and hand off the gray shirt to Caleb when I get to the hallway. The door is open, and through it I see Tobias stuffing abnegation clothes into the trash bin.
Do you think the Amity will lie for us?
I ask him, leaning out the open doorway.
To prevent conflict?
Tobias nods.
Absolutely.
He wears a red collared shirt and a pair of jeans that are fraying at the knee. The combination looks ridiculous on him.
Nice shirt, I say. He wrinkles his nose at me.
It was the only thing that covered up the neck tattoo, okay?
I smile nervously. I forgot about my tattoos, but the shirt hides them well enough. The erudite cars pull up to the compound. There are five of them, all silver with black roofs. Their engines seem to purr as the wheels bump over uneven ground. I slip just inside the building,
leaving the door open behind me, and Tobias busies himself with the latch on the trash bin. The cars all pull to a stop, and the doors pop open, revealing at least 5 men and women in erudite blue, and about 15 in dauntless black. When the dauntless come closer, I see strips of blue fabric wrapped around their arms that can only signify their allegiance to erudite, the faction that enslaved their minds. Tobias takes my hand and leads me into the dormitory. "I didn't think our faction would be that stupid," he says. "You have the gun, right?" "Yes," I say, "but there's no guarantee I can fire it with any accuracy with my left hand." "You should work on that," he says. "Always an instructor." "I will," I say. I shake a little as I add, "if we live." His hands skim my bare arms. "Just bounce a little when you walk," he says, kissing my forehead. "And pretend you're afraid of their guns," another kiss between my eyebrows. "And act like the shrinking violet you could never be," a kiss on my cheek. "And you'll be fine." "Okay," I say. My hands tremble as I grip his shirt collar. I pull his mouth down to mine. A bell sounds. Once, twice, 3 times. It is a summons to the dining hall, where the Amity gather for less formal occasions than the meeting we attended. We join the crowd of abnegation turned Amity. I pull pins from Susan's hair. The hairstyle is too severe for Amity. She gives me a small, grateful smile as her hair falls on her shoulders, the first time I have ever seen it that way. It softens her square jaw. I'm supposed to be braver than the abnegation, but they don't seem as worried as I am. They offer each other smiles and walk in silence, and too much silence. I wedge my way between them and jab one of the older women in the shoulder. "Tell the kids to play tag," I say to her. "Tag?" she says. "They're acting respectful and stiff," I say, cringing as I say the word that was my nickname in Dauntless. "And Amity kids would be causing a ruckus. Just do it, okay?" The woman touches one abnegation child on the shoulder and whispers something to him. A few seconds later, a small group of children run down the hallway, dodging Amity feet and yelling, "I touched you! You're it! No, that was my sleeve!" Caleb catches on, jabbing Susan in the ribs so she shrieks with laughter. I try to relax, injecting a bounce into my step as Tobias suggested, letting my arms swing as I turn corners. It is amazing how pretending to be in a different faction changes everything, even the way I walk. That must be why it's so strange that I could easily belong in 3 of them. We catch up to the Amity in front of us as we cross the courtyard to the dining hall and disperse among them. I keep Tobias in my peripheral vision, not wanting to stray too far from him. The Amity don't ask questions. They just let us dissolve into their faction. A pair of dauntless traitors stand by the door to the dining hall, their guns in hand, and I stiffen. It feels real to me, suddenly, that I am unarmed and being herded into a building surrounded by erudite and dauntless, and if they discover me, there will be nowhere to run. They will shoot me on the spot. I consider making a break for it. But where would I go that they could not catch me? I try to breathe normally. I am almost past them. "Don't look, don't look." A few steps away. Eyes away, away. Susan loops her arm through mine. "I'm telling you a joke," she says, "that you find very funny." I cover my hand with my mouth and force a giggle that sounds high-pitched and foreign. But judging by the smile she gives me, it was believable. We hang on each other the way Amity girls do, glancing at the dauntless and then giggling again. I am amazed by how I managed to do it, with the leaden feeling inside me. "Thank you," I mutter once we're inside. "You're welcome," she replies. Tobias sits across from me at one of the long tables, and Susan sits next to me. The rest of the abnegation spread throughout the room, and Caleb and Peter are a few seats down from me. I tap my fingers on my knees as we wait for something to happen. For a long time we just sit there, and I pretend to be listening to an Amity girl telling a story on my left, but every so often I look at Tobias, and he looks back at me, like we're passing fear back and forth between us. Finally, Johanna walks in with an erudite woman. Her bright blue shirt seems to glow against her skin,
which is dark brown. She searches the room as she speaks to Johanna. I hold my breath as her eyes find me, and then let it out when she moves on without a moment's hesitation. She did not recognize me. At least not yet. Someone bangs on a tabletop, and the room goes quiet. This is it. This is the moment she either hands us over or doesn't.
Our erudite and dauntless friends are looking for some people, Johanna says. Several members of Abnegation, three members of Dauntless, and a former erudite initiate.
She smiles.
In the interest of full cooperation, I told them that the people they were looking for were, in fact, here, but have since moved on. They would like permission to search the premises, which means we have to vote. Does anyone object to a search?
The tension in her voice suggests that if anyone does object, they should keep their mouths shut. I don't know if the Amity pick up on that kind of thing, but no one says anything. Johanna nods to the erudite woman.
Three of you stick around,
the woman says to the dauntless guards clustered by the entrance.
The rest of you, search all the buildings and report back if you find anything. Go.
There is so much they could find. The pieces of the hard drive, clothes I forgot to throw out, a suspicious lack of trinkets and decorations in our living spaces. I feel my pulse behind my eyes as the three dauntless soldiers who stayed behind pace up and down the rows of tables. The back of my neck tingles as one of them walks behind me, his footsteps loud and heavy. Not for the first time in my life. I'm glad that I'm small and plain. I don't draw people's eyes to me. But Tobias does. He wears his pride in his posture, in the way his eyes claim everything they land on. That is not an Amity trait. It can only be a dauntless one. The dauntless woman walking toward him looks at him right away. Her eyes narrow as she walks closer, and then stops directly behind him. I wish the color of his shirt were higher. I wish he didn't have so many tattoos. I wish...
Your hair is pretty short for an Amity, she says.
He did not cut his hair like the Abnegation.
It's hot, he says.
The excuse might work if he knew how to deliver it, but he says it with a snap. She stretches out her hand and, with her index finger, pulls back the collar of his shirt to see his tattoo. And Tobias moves.
He grabs the woman's wrist, yanking her forward so she loses her balance. She hits her head against the edge of the table and falls. Across the room, a gun goes off. Someone screams, and everyone dives under the tables or crouches next to the benches.
Everyone except me. I sit where I was before the gunshot sounded, clutching the edge of the table. I know that's where I am, but I don't see the cafeteria anymore. I see the alley I escaped down after my mother died. I stare at the gun in my hands, at the smooth skin between Will's eyebrows. A small sound gurgles in my throat. It would have been a scream if my teeth had not been clamped shut. The flash of memory fades, but I still can't move. Tobias grabs the dauntless woman by the back of her neck and wrenches her to her feet. She has her gun in his hand. He uses her to shield him as he fires over his right shoulder at the dauntless soldier across the room.
Triss! He shouts. A little help here?
I pull my shirt up just far enough to reach the handle of the gun, and my fingers meet metal. It feels so cold that it hurts my fingertips. But that can't be. It's so hot in here.
A dauntless man at the end of the aisle aims his own revolver at me.
The black spot at the end of the barrel grows around me, and I can hear my heart but nothing else.
Caleb lunges forward and grabs my gun. He holds it in both hands and fires at the knees of the dauntless man, who stands just feet away from him. The dauntless man screams and collapses, his hands clutching his leg, which gives Tobias the opportunity to shoot him in the head. His pain is momentary.
My entire body is trembling and I can't stop it. Tobias still has the dauntless woman by the throat, but this time he aims his gun at the erudite woman.
"Say another word," says Tobias, "and I'll shoot."
The erudite woman's mouth is open, but she doesn't speak.
"Whoever's with us should start running," Tobias says, his voice filling the room.
All at once, the Abnegation rise from their places under tables and benches and start toward the door.
Caleb pulls me up from the bench. I start toward the door. Then I see something. A twitch, a flicker of movement. The erudite woman lifts a small gun, points it at a man in a yellow shirt in front of me. Instinct, not presence of mind, pushes me into a dive. My hands collide with the man and the bullet hits the wall instead of him, instead of me. "Put the gun down," says Tobias, pointing his revolver at the erudite woman. "I have very good aim, and I'm betting that you don't." I blink a few times to get the blurriness out of my eyes. Peter stares back at me. I just saved his life. He does not thank me, and I don't acknowledge him. The erudite woman drops her gun. Together, Peter and I walk toward the door. Tobias follows us, walking backwards so he can keep his gun on the erudite woman. At the last second, before he passes through the threshold, he slams the door between him and her. And we all run. We sprint down the center aisle of the orchard in a breathless pack. The night air is heavy as a blanket and smells like rain. Shouts follow us. Car doors slam. I run faster than I can possibly run, like I'm breathing adrenaline instead of air. The purr of engines chases me into the trees. Tobias's hand closes around mine. We run through a cornfield in a long line. By then, the cars have caught up to us. The headlights creep through the tall stalks, illuminating a leaf here, an ear of corn there. "Split up!" someone yells, and it sounds like Marcus. We divide and spread through the field like spilling water. I grab Caleb's arm. I hear Susan gasping behind Caleb. We crash over corn stalks. The heavy leaves cut my cheeks and arms. I stare between Tobias's shoulder blades as we run. I hear a heavy thump and a scream. There are screams everywhere. To my left, to my right. Gunshots. The abnegation are dying again. Dying like they were when I pretended to be under the simulation. And all I'm doing is running. Finally, we reach the fence. Tobias runs along it, pushing it until he finds a hole. He holds the chain links back so Caleb, Susan, and I can crawl through. Before we start running again, I stop and look back at the cornfield we just left. I see headlights distantly glowing, but I don't hear anything.
"Where are the others?"
whispers Susan. I say, "Gone." Susan sobs. Tobias pulls me to his side roughly and starts forward. My face burns with shallow cuts from the corn leaves, but my eyes are dry. The abnegation deaths are just another weight I am unable to set down. We stay away from the dirt road the erudite and Dauntless took to get to the Amity compound, following the train tracks toward the city. There is nowhere to hide out here. No trees or buildings that can shield us. But it doesn't matter. The erudite can't drive through the fence anyway, and it will take them a while to reach the gate.
"I have to stop,"
says Susan from somewhere in the darkness behind me. We stop. Susan collapses to the ground, crying, and Caleb crouches next to her. Tobias and I look toward the city, which is still illuminated, because it's not midnight yet. I want to feel something. Fear, anger, grief. But I don't. All I feel is the need to keep moving. Tobias turns toward me. "What was that, Triss?" he says. "What?" I say, and I am ashamed of how weak my voice sounds. I don't know whether he's talking about Peter or what came before or something else. "You froze! Someone was about to kill you, and you just sat there!" He is yelling now. "I thought I could rely on you at least to save your own life." "Hey," says Caleb. "Give her a break, all right?" "No," says Tobias, staring at me. "She doesn't need a break." His voice softens. "What happened?" He still believes that I am strong. Strong enough that I don't need his sympathy. I used to think he was right. But now I am not sure. I clear my throat. "I panicked," I say. "It won't happen again." He raises an eyebrow. "It won't," I say again, louder this time. "Okay." He looks unconvinced. "We have to get somewhere safe. They'll regroup and start looking for us."
"You think they care that much about us?"
I say.
Us, yes, he says. We were probably the only ones they were really after, apart from Marcus, who is most likely dead.
I don't know how I expected him to say it. With relief, maybe? Because Marcus, his father, and the menace of his life is finally gone. Or with pain and sadness, because his father might have been killed, and sometimes grief doesn't make much sense. But he says it like it's just a fact. Like the direction we're moving, or the time of day.
Tobias, I start to say. But then I realize I don't know what comes after it.
Time to go, Tobias says over his shoulder.
Caleb coaxes Susan to her feet. She moves only with the help of his arm across her back, pressing her forward. I didn't realize until that moment that dauntless initiation had taught me an important lesson. How to keep going.
Chapter 8. We decide to follow the railroad tracks to the city, because none of us is good at navigation. I walk from tie to tie. Tobias balances on the rail, wobbling only occasionally. And Caleb and Susan shuffle behind us. I twitch at every unidentified noise, tensing until I realize it is just the wind, or the squeak of Tobias's shoes on the rail. I wish we could keep running, but it's a feat that my legs are even moving at this point. Then I hear a low groan from the rails. I bend down and press my palms to the rail, closing my eyes to focus on the feeling of the metal beneath my hands. The vibration feels like a sigh going through my body. I stare between Susan's knees down the tracks and see no train light. But that doesn't mean anything. The train could be running with no horns and no lamps to announce its arrival. I see the gleam of a small train car, far away now, but approaching fast.
It's coming, I say.
It is an effort to get to my feet when all I want to do is sit down, but I do, brushing my hands on my jeans.
I think we should get on.
Even if it's run by the erudite, says Caleb.
If the erudite were running the train, they would have taken it to the Amity compound to look for us, Tobias says. I think it's worth the risk. We'll be able to hide in the city. Here we're just waiting for them to find us.
We all get off the tracks. Caleb gives Susan step-by-step instructions for getting on a moving train, the way only a former erudite can. I watch the first car approach, listen to the rhythmic bump of the car over the ties, the whisper of metal wheel against metal rail. As the first car passes me, I start to run. I ignore the burning in my legs. Caleb helps Susan into a middle car first, then jumps in himself. I take a quick breath and throw my body to the right, slamming into the floor of the car with my legs dangling over the edge. Caleb grabs my left arm and pulls me in the rest of the way. Tobias uses the handle to swing himself in after me. I look up and stop breathing. Eyes glitter in the darkness. Dark shapes sit in the car, more numerous than we are. The factionless. The wind whistles through the car. Everyone is on their feet and armed, except Susan and me, who have no weapons. A factionless man with an eye patch has a gun pointed at Tobias. I wonder how he got it. Next to him, an older factionless woman holds a knife, the kind I used to cut bread with. Behind him, someone else holds a large plank of wood with a nail sticking out of it. I've never seen the Amity armed before, the factionless woman with the knife says. The factionless man with the gun looks familiar. He wears tattered clothes in different colors, a black t-shirt with a torn abnegation jacket over it, blue jeans mended with red thread, brown boots. All faction clothing is represented in the group before me. Black hander pants, paired with black dauntless shirts, yellow dresses with blue sweatshirts over them. Most items are torn or smudged in some way, but some are not. Freshly stolen, I imagine. They aren't Amity, the man with the gun says. They're dauntless. Then I recognize him. He is Edward, a fellow initiate who left Dauntless after Peter attacked him with a butter knife. That is why he wears an eye patch. I remember steadying his head as he lay screaming on the floor, and cleaning the blood he left behind. Hello, Edward, I say. He inclines his head to me.
but doesn't lower his gun.
Triss.
Whatever you are, the woman says, you'll have to get off this train if you want to stay alive.